Coming up on the latest edition of Serie A Awesome, Atalanta dish out Milan's second defeat of the season, while Papu Gomez will be adding some flamenco flair to his famous dance as he heads off to Sevilla. But Aladea really better off without him. Inter failed to capitalise on Milan's league loss when they drew with Udinese, but we do have a Derby della Madonnina to discuss. Weston McKennie is proving to be worth his weight in gold for Juventus. Is Gennaro Gattuso on the hot seat? And homework time. Which team does more with less in Serie A? Welcome in. We have Nikki Bandini, Mina Rizzucchi, myself, Kay Murray, and Matteo Bonetti with you for another week. And we have to start with that Coppa Italia quarterfinal between Inter and Milan. I was going to say to you at the top of this show, you know what, we don't really need to dwell on it. Let's focus more on what's going on in the league. And then it was just so dramatic and so explosive. It had everything you'd want from a derby that we cannot skip over this one. Let's get started then, Matteo, with what everybody was talking about after this game, the beef between Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah, ex-Manchester United teammates. And funnily enough, the beef didn't even start with these two. It was Alessio Romagnoli's physical challenge into the back of Lukaku that kind of got Lukaku upset. He approached Romagnoli, kind of went in with the body. Then Salamakers, a fellow Belgian, put his hand up to Lukaku. It seemed to calm him, and Lukaku swatted it away. So Ibra just added fuel to the fire. It was clear that Lukaku was, I'd say... rarely emotional. We never really see this version of Lukaku. I can't remember the last time I saw Romelu this pissed off about anyone, but I mean, the way that Ibrahimovic was jawing at him, and the microphones picked up very clearly at the halftime when it really looked like they were about to go at it in the tunnel, that Lukaku said something about, don't say anything about my mother. So clearly not great comments. Ibrahimovic had nothing to do with the original incident, picks up a yellow card, and then picks up a stupid yellow card in the second half, which it doesn't matter if you thought it was soft or anything. If you're already on a yellow for a verbal spat, don't make a challenge from behind. You know better. You've been there. You're nearly 40 years old. You're a grown man. You don't need to make that challenge. Brahim Diaz was about to make the challenge himself. It was such a stupid second yellow, and I didn't expect that from Ibrahimovic, and it was unfortunate because I thought it set the tone for the second half where Milan were down to 10 men and Inter took advantage of the chances.
I guess for me, it was... I didn't understand because it looked like Lukaku was already frustrated. I know he was frustrated with Romagnoli and Salamakers when he swatted him away. And I didn't understand why he wasn't sort of his usual happy self. That's what you always see from Lukaku. You know, he's just this guy that comes on the pitch and he sort of spreads joy. Even when he wins a match, he goes over and consoles the opposition if they've lost. You know, he's just that nice guy. But in this match, he just came into it just seemingly a little bit annoyed. So I didn't actually know what happened there. And Ibrahimovic, I guess one of the reasons why he is good is because he likes to pick on these things. You know, it's like Materazzi. He knows when he can start bullying, and if it gets to you, then it gets to you. And I thought, like, the fact that Lukaku came back happy after the dressing room shows him to be a winner, because there's many after that will just disintegrate or fall apart or cry or something, you know. But Lukaku actually came out and said, you know what, I'm going to prove myself on the pitch and I'm going to win this match, and then you're going to look like the idiot. And he did that. It's not nice to see Zlatan in his bullying manner. But the problem is that don't make yourself sort of, I guess, available to that type of thing. And I didn't understand why Lukaku was upset going into this match. Having said all of that, I totally agree. It's a shame for those who are watching the game to see one that I thought was so good, but for it to go from 10 men, you know, from 11 against 11 to 10 against 11, and you lose a player like Zlatan. And for Milan, it's like, I would have liked to see this game when both of them had their best players on the pitch. That was the kind of derby that I was looking for. I wanted to see Calhanoglu, I wanted to see Berisha, and it's a shame that I didn't get to see all of these things.
So as ugly as that situation was, though, Nikki, does it add some extra fuel to the Milan derby? Now that we're seeing that they are much more competitive this season, they're jostling for top spot in the league, do you think some of that's actually spilling over into this game?
Yeah, I was actually going to just come off what Mina said and say we didn't even get to see the first choice referee get to the end of this game because Paolo Valeri pulled his muscle and had to leave the game. It was a crazy night. I think you alluded to it at the top, MK, just being honest with our listeners, I think when we were preparing this show, we didn't imagine that this was going to be such a big story, because yes, it's the Derby, but it's also the Coppa Italia. It's the quarterfinals, which it's starting to mean something, but this is nowhere near the top of the priority list for either of these two clubs. And you see that in some of the team selection, some of the players that are out there. Alexander Kolarov is not someone who perhaps will be in Inter's starting 11. There's lots of examples you can pick out from these two teams. But I think what ramped things up probably already before kickoff is just that little loss of momentum that both clubs have experienced in the league lately. I think if you look at the fact that Milan, who were completely without a defeat, have now lost two games in the space of a couple of weeks. And you look at the fact that Inter, despite that great win over Juventus that we were all lauding them for, have dropped points against Sampdoria, against Roma, against Udinese. There's suddenly a need to win a game, and especially a big game that you feel like, yeah, this will do something for us, it'll matter. And I think you layer on top of that some egos. I don't think as brilliant as Zlatan and Lukaku are, I don't think either of them probably would deny that they can have a bit of ego about them sometimes. And as Mina said, a master manipulator in Ibra, who loves to needle, who loves to get under someone's skin, and frankly, I think thinks about how to do that even in between games, like how he's going to needle someone. It all just led to this, this boiling situation that boiled over. And I think looking at it with some distance, it's ridiculous. I think you look at Ibrahimovic and think, you're nearly 40 and you're sort of behaving a bit like a kid out there, really. But for a spectacle, it created something really unexpected, which was a midweek cup game that, again, kind of should have been the least of these clubs' priorities, but which became 100 minutes of high drama, all capped off with the last man anyone expects scoring the winner in deep into injury time.
And what a goal it was as well, a sublime free kick from Christian Eriksen. And that in itself is a story, isn't it?
It's a monumental story. And I actually was hoping that he would have some success. No one deserves it more than Christian Eriksen. He's now been at Inter for over a year and he's gotten scraps. He's been brought in the 90th minute. This is someone who once upon a time was one of the best attacking midfielders in all of Europe. He played a pivotal part for Tottenham in the Premier League. He did really well for his nation. And now he finds himself in a situation that he's never been in. And Inter, who have been desperately trying to offload him, now realize that no one can take on his mammoth salary of 7.5 million euro net a season. So they were like, right, we have to figure out a way to salvage something from this guy. Let's put him in as a deep line playmaker, even though Antonio Conte said, oh, he's never going to work as a deep line playmaker. He doesn't have the characteristics. What do you know? The last two games, he's the deepest of the midfielders. We already saw it in the last Coppa Italia game, and we saw it today in the final minutes. So you think, right, it's another throwaway Eriksen performance until a set piece beautifully lined up for Eriksen's right foot. I had a feeling, Kay. I even had the tweet ready. I had a feeling it was going top corner. We saw this so many times from him over the course of his career. And what a way to stick it to Conte and say, yeah, you don't want to play me? You want to just throw me in garbage time? Is that what you think of me with everything I've done in my career? Let me show you. And I almost felt like Conte celebrating was almost like, gosh, I have to play this guy now. I'm like going to get away with putting him in the last 60 seconds of a game. It was poetic, I thought.
Is he even thinking that far ahead, or is he just thinking about the press conference and knowing that he's going to have to get angry at the journalists?
Fair point.
I was going to say that it would have been nicer if he had scored the goal from open play. I know that sounds crazy, but then you could have seen that maybe he is moving into the tactical plan of Antonio Conte.
Even give if, him a break,
still not enough for you,
Mina, give him a break.
No, I'm not. It's not about him. I guess for me, I don't think that this necessarily does anything with Conte. Like I do. I mean, if Eriksen is not being played, I know that a lot of it is on Conte, and I will blame him sometimes for this, but it's also a little bit on Eriksen. You have to ask, like, Tottenham was pretty much the only team that came for him back in the day, and they got him and they brought him in, and now he's at Inter, and it kind of seems like there's still no one who's really buying the player. There's got to be something going on with this player as well. We can't just entirely blame the coach. And when he did come on, he scored a wonderful free kick, but it's not like he just open play created 14 avenues, wonderful chances. So I mean, I think Antonio Conte can still turn around and say to us, I'm not sure how I can get this guy to do something for me that I need him to do. That's the only thing that I'm saying, isn't it? It would have been nice for them to open.
There is one really tiny pickup just off that, which I think is super interesting. Inter had not scored from a direct free kick since April 2018. That's wild.
That's when
you think
Ericsson.
About a team that, yeah, that actually like does, in general, in Serie A, is going to have more chances than most opponents, right? It's a team that is generally higher up the table. To not score from a free kick in 3 years is something.
But I will say that overall, I mean, when you look at this game, I think that, you know, I was listening to you, Matteo, on ESPN FC, and you were talking about whether or not this was something that was going to give a lot of confidence to Inter going forward. And I don't know if that's true. And I don't know if this is going to sap away the confidence of Milan. I feel like as big as this game was and as dramatic as it was, it changes nothing. Because I still believe in Milan's desire to always prove themselves. I now feel confident in the fact that there's no loss that is going to make them wither away and fall apart. I feel strong when it comes to their mentality. Likewise, when it comes to Inter, while I think they always, it's strange really, because this is a team that actually has not such a great defensive record and a great attacking record. I feel safer when it comes to them defending in the big matches and getting the scoreline when they need to at the end, their end, and suffering a little bit more. But I'm actually not that confident of them in getting the goal, even with the fact that they were facing 10 men and the fact that they dominated possession and they were the better team. I wasn't sure it was going to come. And this is where I feel like, again, it's set pieces, it's a penalty, it's a free kick that rescued them. And it's not that the chances weren't there, but there's something about the side that never makes me feel that sure. We've seen against like Savudinese, we've seen against the likes of Sampdoria, those who closed them down, it's always been a problem. But it's strange because on a mental level, you feel like it's there. I don't know. I mean, Conte speaks of efficiency. I don't know if it's the efficiency, but it's a little bit like, you know how Juventus and Napoli have the best defensive record, and yet they're the worst when you attack them with overwhelming attacks. They just crumble in defense, even if they have a strong statistics. So I feel like despite this game, and I don't think it changes much in the overall flow, I'm not entirely sure that I would discount Milan, and I'm not entirely sure that I would make it into favorites going forward.
Well, let's pick up on that mental aspect then, and we'll start with Milan, because that's two losses for them now, because they had that big loss to Atalanta, and we'll get to Atalanta in just a moment. But seeing as though we are talking about the mental aspect with Milan, let's stay there. Is there anything to worry about for them, even before this derby?
Absolutely not. Let's look back at the post-lockdown era for Milan. They put 4 goals past Juventus and beat them. They beat Inter. They've beaten all the top teams in 2020, right? This is now a fallback to reality, which isn't at the level of Lazio and what happened to them post-lockdown. But let's not forget that before the season, most Milan fans would have signed on the dotted line for that fourth place. The Scudetto is unthinkable before the season, that they would even be in the conversation when they haven't even been able to reach the top four since like 2013. This is unbelievable, an overreach, an overachievement that Milan have done. The difference, though, is in the past, the points that they would drop were against the poor sides in Serie A. So many times they would drop points against teams fighting for salvation, against mid-table teams that they should have comfortably handled. And maybe they were mid-table. Maybe Milan was only a mid-table side, really, in terms of talent, like in that 7-9 range in the last few years. Milan, though, now have better players. They have a leader in Ibrahimovic. They have a clear plan. They have an identity. They have continuity. So they fell back down to earth. But Earth is actually looking pretty good right now for Milan. Earth still means top four, still means you're going to the Champions League. I don't think Milan are going to win the Scudetto because I feel like now, okay, they lost against Juventus, they lost against Atalanta, they lost against Inter. There's no shame in either of those three. It's better to lose against them than to drop points against Spezia and Crotone and Benevento and all these different teams. So that's the main difference between this season and the ones before, is that they drop points against teams that there's no shame in losing points to. Teams that have a bigger wage bill, that have more depth, that have more talent. And in the end, Milan don't win the Scudetto. That's fine. They're finishing top four.
But it was,
yeah, you're the one who I was telling us Atalanta's wage bill.
Sorry, yeah. You know what I meant. Inter and Juventus.
What does that say about this Atalanta?
I feel like Mina wanted to react on Milan. I have plenty to say about Atalanta, but let Mina, because I think Mina had something to get in on.
Just because when it comes to Milan, that I do, I know that we always talk about this, but I'm just saying, like, let's just imagine they were facing Atalanta with Çalhanoğlu behind, you know, where Zlatan is not feeling isolated. Where are there are options to bring on that isn't Maite playing in a trequartista role? I do think Stefano Pioli made a mistake in that particular game, but even in, against Juventus, the other loss that they faced, you know. Again, they don't have necessarily the squad depth that the first two, you know, in Inter and Juventus have. So I think despite all of this, despite the fact that, you know, when you look at the fact that Inter can throw in Eriksen, they can throw in Lautaro Martinez to play with Sanchez and Lukaku, that they can bring on Ashraf Hakimi. And meanwhile, Milan's like, okay, well, we just lost Zlatan and we don't have Çalhanoğlu, we don't have Bennacer, we don't really have like most of our team, you know. Calabria is not being, you know, is not on the pitch. And so despite all of that, weirdly enough, I didn't feel like they might lose this match until, you know, I mean, even though Inter was throwing the kitchen sink at them. So I'm not like, this is why I just feel like there's so much to take out of this, much like that we took out of against their loss against Juventus. This is a strong team. Can you imagine them when they're fully assembled and going? And yet, despite all of this, I feel their confidence is still sky high. The way they talk is always like winners. And so I believe in them. Whereas the fact is, when you look at other sides, like sometimes Napoli, like sometimes Inter, you expect more from them because of what they have, because of the talent, especially for example of a side like Juventus.
I think there's no question that the expectations at Inter are higher, and I agree with Matteo's sort of broad idea that most Milan fans at the start of the season would have been delighted with top four, and I think that Milan are going to finish in the top four. I feel very confident in that idea. Having said that, they've been top. And we can still have a conversation about the fact that they've lost three games in a very short space of time when they hadn't lost any for a very long time. I think it's meaningful. I think there is this question that we did ask at the start of, are they going to react well when things wobble? Because at some point the wobble is going to come. And there are some things that bother you. I think Maite is, or Maite, I'm not sure I'm saying his name right. Maite. Either way, I think he's being asked a lot of to go straight into that team and fill a really important role. And I think he was below sufficienza. He was not up to scratch at the weekend, and he wasn't, you know, against in the cup either. He's not ready for that role. I think that specifically in the Atalanta game, he was, Gasperini went after that as well as anything. I think the use of Romero already in this Atalanta team is something that has been really pivotal to how much to Atalanta's evolution, I guess, their post-Papu change. But I thought he dominated that space all around Ibrahimovic. And if Ibrahimovic looked isolated, it was partly on Milan and partly on how well Atalanta were governing the space around him.
Yes.
But I do have some concerns about whether or not this team that is still missing Bennacer, and that's been for a while, but I think his influence would have been very welcome these last few games, because Sandro Tonali, another player who for me, as yet, hasn't done it. I think Mina was raising the point about Theo Hernandez in big games as well. There's a few things that aren't quite where you want them to be, and yeah, it's a concern for the title race. It doesn't have to be a concern for top four. I don't think it is. But Milan are in this title race. They don't get to hide from that just because expectations weren't there before. They are good enough. And this is a wobble. And it's something that they have to show they can pick themselves out of.
Yeah,
I want to pick out what you said about Maite. That was actually one of the few times I can remember where Stefano Pioli made a clear tactical mistake. I think he put in Maite to try to combat that aggressiveness, that pressure that Atalanta have in the midfield, where you know that that's where they win, right? They have the three midfielders who just kill you in the 50-50s. They can overload you. So you put in Maite in theory to try to really go toe-to-toe and to just add another physical presence on the pitch with Kessié and Tonali behind. But what you're also losing is any semblance of creativity in the final third, where a lot of the play for Milan does go through Hakan Çalhanoğlu, who's become one of Milan's best players. And there was Brahim Diaz on the bench. Whether or not Pioli thought maybe Brahim, because of his lack of physicality, that it would have been a really tough game for him, I kind of get. But, I mean, it couldn't have gone any worse than what Maite did. And then we saw Brahim against Inter. Pretty quiet game, but this is someone who can at least play with the ball at his feet, that can get in between the lines. One player, though, that I want to mention real quick, Fikayo Tomori, who, imagine making your debut. You just did your medicals 4 days ago.
Completely unexpectedly.
Completely unexpectedly, as Simon Kaya, as he, funnily enough, Kaya
has come out
to social media to say, you guys have all been butchering my name. It's not Kia, it's Kaya. So there we go. But he left with an injury, and Tomori makes his Milan debut against Inter in a feisty game, and thought he did really well. He showed aggressiveness. I thought he looked confident. He had a goal line clearance. So really happy for him.
But let's touch on Atalanta then, because that was a big win for them. And we've just seen such great things from them. And there's so many places to go here, because obviously they're on a great run of form. Papu's gone. Papu's gone to Sevilla. I mean, where do we start with this? Is this the right club for him? Are Atalanta really better without him? Or will we see in time that he is missed?
There's no question that they're going to be games. There already have been games, I think, where they've missed him. He's too big of a talent not to miss. I understand how it's come to this. I can understand Gasperini's way of rationalizing it out. He is a manager who, we've talked about it before, he was nicknamed Gaspers, and he had this reputation in Italy at a time. It's always been a time in Italy where coaches are coaches in Italy. Even the word allenatore, which is translated generally to manager in English, it means trainer. And coach's job is generally to do the coaching. But Gasperini has always aspired to the more Ferguson role, this idea of an overarching figure who controls the direction of a club and who is embedded in the fabric of a club. And I think he's taken on more and more of that at Atalanta. And this was a power struggle, frankly, between the manager and his captain. He was asserting his authority over the squad, and he won. And there is, for him as a manager, some value in having won that. There is some value in being able to look around and say, look, I'm in charge here. You need to respect that authority. How that offsets against what you lose in the versatility, the creativity, the frankly, just the magic of Papu Gomez, is hard to assess in a small picture. You kind of have to step back and see where things are almost in a year's time, I think. Because what we saw in this game, I mean, I've touched on Romero, and I really do think that putting Romero back into that centre-back role as the sort of the free man in a back three is inspired. It was not something that had been done before with him, and I think it's been huge for this team. But obviously, the real player that everyone's looking at in this game is Josip Iličić. And when Iličić is as good as this, you don't miss Papu, because when you have Iličić doing this, you don't need another creative superstar. He can do it on his own, and he did. But Iličić has never, and he's in his 30s now, he's never in his career convinced me that he can do every week through a whole season at these sorts of levels. There's always been ups and downs. And that's going to be the question. Do you have enough throughout those ups and downs? Again, I think I listed a bunch of names last week. There's so many other attacking talents in this team. It's not like you don't have options, but it's a different team without Papu, for sure. And Pessina, who's filling that number 10 role, is a very, very different interpreter of that role. He's a worker and a grafter and a ball winner, but he's not Papu.
No, he's not. And Miranchuk and Malinovsky are the other two that could play that role that haven't. I mean, Malinovsky, we've seen he's got this incredible shot from distance. Miranchuk is still a work in progress, even though Atalanta spent a lot of money given what they normally do in the transfer market. I believe it was about €12 million to bring him over from the Russian Premier League. So you have to miss Papu. You're one Iličić injury away from missing him greatly. Pessina is, as you said, more of that forward destroyer who can win the ball back and doesn't have the class in you know, even 1/10 of Papu Gomez. But then again, not a lot of players do. Of course, you're going to miss Papu in the big games. There's a reason why Atalanta were minutes away from going to the Champions League semifinal when they nearly did it against Paris Saint-Germain. It's because you had Papu and Iličić. You didn't have one guy that, right, the defense can just focus in on that guy and say, right, we stop him, then Atalanta don't really have a creative force. So he's going to be missed down the stretch without a shadow of a doubt. And it's not like Papu lost a step. I mean, Papu was still very effective even in his early 30s. Last season, he was an assist machine. This campaign, when he was playing, he's still Papu. It's not like this is a shadow of his former self that's in the twilight of his career, ready to go to some foreign country to play.
It's interesting because the papers came out with some statistics on Papu's influence on Atalanta. Now, in the games that he's played, Atalanta have averaged 1.5 points a game. In the games in which he's been absent or hasn't been played, they've averaged 2.3 points a game, which means they're actually better with them. But this is where the stats are wrong. Yeah, because sometimes what we're focusing on is that I think that when, you know, it's funny because there's so many cliches said about the Italian league. And one of them is that, you know, it's a soft league, as in it's not physically strong, like, you know, the physicality is not important, but I actually think it's a league in which physicality wins a lot. It is why I think that, you know, when you see performances by Inter against Juventus, you see athleticism matters. These are the reasons why they let go of a player like Coutinho, because they didn't think he would be able to withstand the physical pressure of Serie A. I mean, effectively, he did very well in Liverpool in what is supposed to be a more physical league. But I think that it's not necessary to always have an abundance of quality in midfield in certain matches in Serie A. But I think where you feel the necessity of a player like Papu is, like I said, in matches against Udinese, in matches against Genoa, when everyone shuts up shop and then you have to find a way through. And that is by controlling the tempo, using the ball well, having a special chemistry that you have. Now, here it is. At the end of the day, Atalanta lost, and a rather a big slap in the face when they lost 5-0 against Liverpool. That was heartbreaking. And what did Gasperini do, who is, in my opinion, the best tactician, because he studies the opponent perfectly? Again, when we talk about Stefano Pioli, I would have also put Mete in a trequartista role, because I would have thought I would need a physicality there as well. So I mean, that makes sense to me, you know. I mean, I wouldn't have chosen Brahim Diaz either, but it's because Gasperini studies everyone so well. And when again, when he had to play Liverpool again, he thought, you know what, I'm going to rely on my relationship, the relationship that exists between Iličić and Papu Gomez, the two most intellectual midfielders that I have, and the relationship that they have, to you bring that in with the sacrifice of all the other midfielders, control that middle, and then score the goals. And they did, and they won that 2-0. Liverpool didn't have a shot on goal, and this is where intellect won over everything else. So I think the fact that what Papu gives you with his companionship with Iličić is that special understanding. He knows exactly what kind of ball Zapata wants, which is why Zapata has flourished with him as well. And I think that we're missing that. I'm happy he's going to Sevilla, because if there's any team in Spain that deserves to really grow, it is one that is under the tutelage of Monchi and Julian Lopetegui. Toni Kroos came out recently and said that, you know, he felt heartbroken when Lopetegui was sacked from Real Madrid, and so thrilled for him when he won the Europa League, because he is a very good manager. And so if it is Papu wanting somebody who just talks to him and allows him all the creativity and happiness in the world, then I'm glad that it's Lopetegui, because I feel like there's a really special relationship that could really flourish there. But of course, it's a big miss, whether it's a 1.5 or 2.3. At the end of the day, Papu Gomez is one of the most exceptionally intelligent midfielders. And whether you want a physical team or not, he is always, always for me, the first name on the pitch, if I could have him.
Something very interesting as well, obviously, he's gone to Sevilla, that I heard on the radio from an old colleague of ours last night, Ray Hudson, who doesn't usually talk about rumours unless he knows it for sure, is that he said he knows for sure Papu Gomez did explore going to an MLS club. Now, Ray works for Inter Miami. Ray wouldn't say which club it was, but did put out there that perhaps there's a reason that he knows this. But he said, I'm not one to bring up rumours like this unless I know for sure this happened. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Can you imagine that? Papu Gomez to MLS would be like Jovinko on steroids, even. I mean, Papu Gomez is, we can agree that Papu Gomez has had a better career than Sebastian Jovinko, especially in Serie A, and he's done it for more seasons. In MLS, given Jovinko's talent as that kind of diminutive playmaker who could beat his man and score goals, Papu Gomez would have been brilliant for MLS. And listen, he's going to be brilliant for Sevilla. He should be a starter. I am going to watch every Sevilla game when Papu's starting. I can tell you that much.
While we're just finishing on Atalanta, can we just say Martin Duran is just amazing.
Such a troll.
On social media. He is so fun.
What about the people who took it more seriously than, I'm sure,
even
Ibrahimovic?
First of all, explain what, just in case somebody didn't see it.
So Ibrahimovic told Zapata, I've scored more goals than you have games played. Martin Duran turned that into a troll video on his Twitter account.
with the Curb Your Enthusiasm music.
With the Curb your enthusiasm music and put a highlight montage right after that was said of the goals that Atalanta scored against Milan. Remember, Atalanta beat Milan 5-0 under Pioli.
But then he put a hilarious comment on it and like said something like,
It was good. I love this level of trolling. You know, let's not, why does everyone have to pretend like they're all good friends and all buddy-buddy? Like,
I want
the Derby della Madonnina to be heated. It reminds me of the good old days when Milan and Inter were fighting for everything. You know, this is maybe why we saw it yesterday, because this is the first time in more than a decade that Milan and Inter are genuinely fighting for the Scudetto together alongside Juve.
Let's pick up on the mentality chat then when it comes to Inter, because if we do just focus on the league, last weekend was a missed opportunity to go top, especially after going out and beating Juve in the previous game too. That Conte was annoyed with the ref and the decisions after that draw with Udinese. And if they do go on to win the Scudetto, my question is would a title-winning team ever have had this much criticism throughout the season, Mina?
It's an interesting question, Kate, because I don't know how to answer it, because it's true. Like, if there's any other team who's running for the Scudetto and doing as well as, let's say, Inter have done, then I don't think they deserve all the criticisms. But I think it's the way that they've gone about this, the way that they've improved this, the project that they've started. There are a lot of expectations, because when we look at the value of the squad, for example, it is 80 million off Juventus. But it's still a squad depth that, you know, the likes of others would dream of. You have a coach there who's perhaps the most experienced coach in Serie A. He's a proven winner. So there's a lot that we expect from them. And perhaps because of the fact that they didn't live up to expectations in Europe. So it's a little bit like, if you lose this now, are you just failing or are you living up to these expectations? It's a very difficult question to answer. Also, because none of what they really produce on the pitch ever tends to excite you so much. Having said that, they've managed a wonderful win against Juventus. I thought that was their best performance under Antonio Conte. But there was an interesting conversation, actually, in Italy between Di Canio and Beppe Bergomi. And Bergomi at the time said that he doesn't see that this team can grow so much under Antonio Conte. They might have reached their limit, a little bit like, you know, some teams did, you know, with their coaches. And Di Canio said, what are you talking about? We've all said that Conte is one of the best coaches there. There's got to be room for improvement. But you look around at the side and you're not sure, because what is it? Is it bringing better players? Because they're 5 points off where they were last season. And for a side that is building towards something, you can see that perhaps they might win the title of the season. But what is the end game? Are they going to be a team that challenges in Europe? Are they closer to being a side that can win the treble again? What is the end point? Are they going to be a brand that everyone wants to invest in, to watch on a regular basis, which is, you know, I guess the next moves for certain clubs? And I'm not sure about that, because they sort of still had the same vulnerabilities. Yet again, they were faced with an Udinese side, or a side that just knows how to shut them out and doesn't give them all the space in the world like Andrea Pirlo does. And they managed to not find a way through. And I don't know whether it's based on tactics anymore, because the chances are there. We speak of efficiency and determination, but there's just something that just doesn't, like I said, I don't trust them to get the goals when it matters, and I don't know why.
I'm tickled because Kay asked if they're the most criticised team, and then I feel like Mina.
She's like the ringleader.
I was laughing to myself when you were posing the question, actually, Kay, because you started saying Antonio Conte was annoyed, and I just thought you could just end there, because Antonio Conte is always annoyed. And sometimes I think this perception of the criticism against him is amplified, because anything that anyone says to him, he interprets as criticism. Like any comment that a journalist will ask him a question about any involvement of any player, and he will reframe it in his head and in his answer as an attack on him. And sometimes that's really exhausting. And also, perhaps sometimes it's necessary, and it's how he works, and it's how he keeps his team in this siege state that I think he favours, that he likes his players to have. I don't know with this team. I know I've sometimes felt like on this podcast we're too critical of them, given that they are second in the league, given that they have won some big games. But I feel like I almost don't want to answer that question myself that you've posed until we get to the end and see if they do win it, because they do sort of have to. I'm sort of in agreement on that. I think they have set themselves up this season now in a place where the Champions League is gone. All right, you've got the Coppa Italia ticking on, and that was a nice win over your city rival. But I think you are supposed to compete for the title and nothing else now. And really, you have to go all the way to the end with that. And I mean, I feel like I'm in danger myself of jerking the knee too hard this month. I think I did it before the Juventus game, and I did it again after the Juventus game. And now I'm looking at their January as a whole, and I'm thinking, I don't know what judgment to put on this, because you've won your two most important games and you've dropped everything else.
Yeah.
It's a confusing team right now. There's a lot that is worthy of praise, but it's a hard team to assess.
Yeah, I think that this is the first time in the last decade where Inter not winning the Scudetto would be seen as a massive failure, just because of the chaos that Juventus have been in under Andrea Pirlo, because Inter are not in Europe, and also because of the way that Inter have spent the last few summers. Like, they're making a very competitive side that is supposed to get out of the Champions League group stage, is supposed to challenge for the Scudetto, but with the position that they are now, with this lead over Juventus, with Milan that, you know, we're wondering, are they going to run out of steam before the end of the season? They have to win the Scudetto. So as for the Conte comments and the constant criticism, I feel like that comes more so because think of every manager right now at the top of their game, right? The top managers in Europe, for the most part, I'd say that they can be a little bit more flexible than the way that Conte is. And there's this whole talk all season long about what is this guy's plan B when things don't go right. We've seen the best version of Conte's Inter, which was against Juventus in the Derby d'Italia. That was the best version that we've seen of Inter in years, right? When everything goes right, it reminded me of those early Juventus days under Antonio Conte, right? Where they just kick the crap out of you. They win the 50-50s. They boss the midfield. And they take out any sort of beauty or possession that you want to do because they're just the first to every ball. And then you go to the next week and suddenly you're realizing Conte's in-game management with his substitutions, with his inability to adapt to whatever the game is giving him during the 90 minutes, that's where I feel like is his weak point, just based on what we've seen throughout the course of his career. So some of the criticism is warranted, but I wonder how much of it would go away if Inter only had one plan A, but that plan A was, let's play super well, let's play like Maurizio Sarri's Napoli. Then everyone would be like, oh, but look, this is, you know, the modern football and possession football. But I feel like he almost attracts criticism because of the style of Inter, which is more defensive counterattacking and not so much aesthetically pleasing.
Weston McKennie with a goal against Bologna in Juve's 2-0 win against them. He's proven to be quite the buy. It is a Weston McKennie appreciation segment. At least it's going to start that way, because we'll kick off with Matteo talking about a man you've already interviewed this season. Could Juve have expected him to hit the heights he is for this side?
Well,
I'd have hoped he would. But
they obviously saw something in him at Schalke that made them want to go out and give him a significant role in the midfield, because this was right after Blaise Matuidi left to Inter Miami. They needed that sort of energetic midfielder to come in and basically help cover on Cristiano Ronaldo's flank, where Cristiano Ronaldo, you're not going to expend his energy tracking back. He stays forward. So you need someone to do that dirty work in the midfield on the left side. But what we've seen is completely different to the kind of player that I think most people who hadn't really watched him, and even Schalke fans, this is a new level now, a new height that Weston McKennie has reached. In the last game Juventus played in Serie A, McKennie, with Kulusevski and Ronaldo starting up front, both would drift to wide. McKennie would be the furthest man forward on every single Juventus attack, almost as like this makeshift striker when Juventus were on the ball, whereas when they lost possession, McKennie would track back and help out everyone defending. So the work rate that he put in, the amount of versatility that he can offer, he is not just a Blaise Matuidi box-to-box high-energy guy. He is so much more than that. He's smart with the ball at his feet. He makes very good runs. He's shown that he can score a few goals as well. And that $20 million, whatever buyout it is, that is looking like maybe the bargain of the summer at this point, because he has been exceeding every single expectation possible.
You know, there's something about Pirlo that you know, I've always thought that he was obviously, you know, like wonderful on a tactical level, but the way that he judges players has always been a bit like, in his biography, he described Matri as sort of the best Italian striker. And I just thought, yeah, you really don't have to spot talent.
Mitra,
if that's who you think is the best striker, then I'm not going to trust you going forward. And yet when Juventus were looking for a midfielder on a low, you know, low cost option, somebody who could replace Matuidi, he's the one who pointed them in the direction of Weston McKennie. He said that he'd watched him a few times in Schalke and he really liked what he could add to this team. And you know what? He's been spot on. And perhaps it's because he knows the kind of game that he wants to play, which is winning the ball high up the pitch, the physical duels, the understanding of space and where to how to occupy it and create and add something to the attack, as well as get back and defend. He really understands the duality of the role that he is facing right now. Sometimes I have issues with the way that he's placed, and I don't know whether that's Pirlo or where he tends to slide to, but I mean, the way that McKennie has really approached this team, the determination that he shows at all times, the intellect that he has on the ball, he's truly been an added weapon. And I just feel like he is very much sort of, there's always a standout player for every team. And every day we decide, who is this team really dependent on? And we say it was Morata in the beginning, it's always Ronaldo, but it might just be McKennie right now.
Yeah, I also really like McKennie. I slightly worry that this is a player that we are building beyond where he is right now. I think that when Matteo invoked Blaise Matuidi, I'm like, hang on, Blaise Matuidi had a serious career and showed over a very long period, I think, his intelligence as a footballer as well as anything else. And I think McKennie sometimes looks like such a standout in the Juventus midfield because the rest of that midfield's been quite bad. Work ethic is hugely welcome and his graft is hugely welcome, and I think he has the potential to become something very, very good. I think he's again probably been the best midfielder in that group this season. I don't know if sometimes I just feel this sort of little layer of pause when I hear him getting hyped up this much of like, okay, you know, yes, he is good, Nikki, but are we going too far? Sorry?
You're playing devil. I'm saying just give into it. Give into the hype. You're playing devil's advocate right now. I get it. But I was comparing to the last season of Blaise Matuidi, which was his down year, because we covered a lot of Blaise Matuidi at PSG and he was a fantastic footballer. Mm-hmm. Although I never really saw the kind of touch from Blaise Matuidi that Weston McKennie has. I'm not saying Weston McKennie is now Papu Gomez, but he's tidy with the ball at his feet and he makes quick decisions. And he looks like he has more going forward than Blaise Matuidi ever had. So he's fundamentally a different midfielder than I think anyone was expecting of him. Even the scouting reports from the, you know, the US journalists before were saying, oh, this is, you know, a high energy guy and blah, blah, blah. But he is really a complete midfielder. I agree that the lack of anyone next to him who has looked fully competent consistently is obviously helping his stock, because it's not that hard to really stand out in this Juventus midfield. But he is, let's just say that he is an absolute bargain at 20 million. Is he going to become world class? I'm not saying that, but he was a very good signing by Juventus.
I agree with this. And I think that you both touched on this in the sense that I think that what this reflects is how bad the rest of them are. And in the sense of, you know, Rabiot has his moments, don't get me wrong, but for the amount, you know, the salary that he's on, I know he's come for free, but it's like when you see what McKennie can do and when you can see how much the midfield changes when Arthur plays. I mean, Arturo Melo has, for me, I understand that he has yet to get to grips with Italian football. Maybe the fast releases aren't always there, but he's been magnificent when he has played in the least in those last two games. I like the way that he plays his football. He tends to keep the ball. He always chooses the right option. I think that he just needs to understand what's going on, and just a little bit of consistency and continuity could really bring him forward. And I think that what he was brought on to do was in Barcelona was to be a little bit of a Xavi, but I think that he's a player who doesn't necessarily want to sit in front of the defense. I don't think he has the physicality for it, but I think that when he is allowed to engage in the duality of the role of midfield, then he does very well. And I think that as long as he's there and you have McKennie, then I feel safer with that midfield. But again, this is a Juventus team where I struggle to judge, because this was a game in which I thought Bologna made it rather easy for them to play their game, which is very vertical football. And you got to see the best of the players like McKennie, like Arthur. And the only, once again, I'm just a little bit worried about where Kulusevski fits in all of this, because when it comes to actual talent on the ball, I think he's one of the best there. And something's going wrong over there, because I think that he's always performing well, but I know he's capable of much better. You know, this is when we talk about Zlatan, the bully, but Zlatan also knows how to pick a great footballer. And when he does, he invests a lot of time in him. And he thinks that Kulusevski is one of the best. And I agree, because we've seen that from him. We've seen it at Parma. We've seen it at the beginning with Juventus. But why was he being played rather than Morata? What's going on there? Why is Morata not being played as much? There's questions that I still have for Pirlo, because I still don't know how to adequately judge Juventus and their performance, and whether I can seriously see them challenging for the title. If they do end up winning this by some masterstroke, it's because Milan and Inter gave it up, you know, a little bit like how Bayern ends up winning the Bundesliga every season, because this is a team that isn't yet found its identity. It does well in fits and bursts, and when it does well, it's beautiful to watch. But a lot of the time, you just don't really feel safe when it comes to them defending, even though they have the best defensive record.
I want to sort of pick up one thing that I think ties into that, but brings it back to McKennie just for a second without overdoing the McKennie chat. I think what's really interesting is that actually Juventus being this not very tactically rigid side, because they're not, because Pirlo has adopted this idea of roles and almost giving players a good amount of freedom to be the player that he thinks they can be. I think that suits McKennie really, really well. I think what's stood out to me about McKennie is how well he operates when the game gets a little bit, for want of a better word, like, you know, parking lot ball, when it gets a little bit messy, he really thrives in those situations. He's a player who takes command of situations that are messy. I think of some of his greatest contributions, most important ones, coming off the bench against Torino, against Milan, situations where the game is a bit leggy, where there are more spaces. I think he really has that presence, which is very impressive in such a young player, of taking command of messy situations. I wonder if at a club, another club, and my head is on Inter just because it's a good example of a very rigid system, it's a very, very strict set of responsibilities, if we would have seen this much from him this soon. I think he's actually thrived almost because of that same lack of clarity that perhaps isn't working for other players in that midfield. I think that you were sort of touching on there, Mina.
Next up, is Gennaro Gattuso on the hot seat at Napoli? And if not, should he be? Because Rafa Benitez has been mentioned as a possible replacement. What happened to Napoli against Hellas Verona? I know we'll get into the defensive problems there. So what do you think, Mina? Is he on the hot seat?
Yeah, he is, probably, because, you know, they shove everyone on that damn hot seat when it shouldn't really be. I'm sorry, it's just that it still annoys me about Fonseca. And again, now we have Gattuso, and it's just like, how many coaches do Napoli have to go through when you realize that maybe they're just always going to be the bridesmaid and not really the bride? You know, like, there needs to be something that we look at that is more than just what the coach is doing. And I think that when you look at the performances, they've always been a team that creates so many opportunities. They've always been a team that have a lot of shots on goal. And yet they're always the team that ends up losing the matches that you don't need them to lose, or that you hope they don't lose. And so, you know, I mean, they have had Ancelotti. They've had a great number of coaches: Maurizio Sarri, Rafa Benitez, Carlo Ancelotti. I mean, winners in every way. Gattuso, who is the king of mentalities, apparently. And if all of this is still not working under all these coaches, then maybe something needs to be looked at in different ways. Because this is the third most valuable squad in Serie A. They have great players in every piece of the pitch. If you look at it, they have one of the best defenders in the world at the back. They have a great midfield of different talents, from Fabian Ruiz to Bakayoko. And then you look at their forward line, and it's the stuff of dreams for most people. And yet they're just soft. The defending in this match was embarrassing to watch, frankly. The way that they just got pulled apart, no one understood positioning whatsoever. That, I feel like, has never really been the same since Albiol left. And I was just commenting before, like, he might have been the slowest defender, but my God, did he provide a lot of organization at the back. And I thought that he brought the best out of Koulibaly. And ever since then, it's sort of not really been something that I feel safe in, despite what the stats would say. So you look at them again, forward line, what, they have the most shots on goal in Europe, and yet again, there's no clinical efficiency. And this has been their problem for so many years. So I don't know whether you just have to rip it all up and start again, you know, get rid of everyone. I know that's not going to be the easy solution, but only Jose Mourinho and Fabio Capello could really come in and maybe beat the side into like performing to their top levels potentially. But then you would strip them of that creativity under Jose Mourinho, for example. But I don't think it's a coach's problem. I just think that there's not enough fire, enough desire in that side. There's something that needs to click on a mental level that hasn't clicked now for 5 years.
I think that this season in particular, and maybe what hasn't clicked is they were always second best to Juventus, a team that had infinitely more resources than Napoli. But even in the last few months, Napoli haven't really dealt well with the injuries that they've seen happen throughout the squad. They've been a completely different side without Fabian Ruiz as that creative force in the midfield. When you have Bakayoko and Dembe, two fine players, but you lose that guy who can get in between the lines, who can drive forward. Dries Mertens has now been iffy for a few months after that ankle injury. Victor Osimhen, we haven't seen in months, and he completely changed that attack. So the memories I have of the first few rounds of the season, the kind of football that Napoli played when you had Mertens and Osimhen and Fabian Ruiz all out there, that was simply intoxicating. So we know what this Napoli side can be. And that team looked like someone that could go out and genuinely challenge for the Scudetto because they were absolutely brilliant. I think that Napoli at their all-time high hit a different tune than almost anyone in the league. I mean, it was that good. So to see this team really struggle with the injuries that they've had, with the COVID cases and all that, and yes, you're right, the defense was terrible. Hristo Maksimovic just completely out of position against an Hellas Verona side that has posed problems to all the big boys in Serie A now for two seasons under Ivan Juric. So it's not like this happened against Crotone. But
it happened against It happened against Marco Giampaolo's Torino. Come on. They have a better side than this.
You're right. But again, look at the team. Look,
I thought that too.
The players that they had out is the big problem for me. And I know that we can't use that as an excuse because in this season, every team is going through the same thing. But it just seems to have affected the efficiency of Napoli more so than most teams in the league.
Yeah, I don't know that I have something profound to add to what you two guys have just said. I think they're a frustrating team. There's some good stuff even now still happening. Lozano, I think, has scored. If you take out, I can't remember if it's just penalties or penalties and free kicks, but like the third most goals in the league from open play, I think. He's been a really sort of bright spot this season. But somehow this team has been... Well, I was about to say it's been less than the sum of its parts. It's almost been some weeks so much more and then other weeks so much less. It's never been consistently at the level that you think it should be for the amount of talent there is in that team.
Following on then from last week's, has anyone done less with more? We were talking about Fiorentina. We said we'd do, has anyone done more with less? And Matteo couldn't wait for the podcast. He already took to Twitter to talk about this. So go on, you can start.
I'm going to go with Hellas Verona. I think Hellas Verona is the side that under Ivan Juric, a team that if you maybe switch the manager to someone else, they would be fighting for salvation because that's how I thought the season would go on for them in the last campaign. And then Ivan Juric flirts with European football. He creates really good players out of relative unknowns. I mean, who had ever heard of Amir Rahmani and Kumbula and Sofyan Amrabat? And suddenly those three sell for big money. And you think, right, well, Verona just lost three of their best players. They lost two of their center backs, their best midfielder. It's over. They don't have a goal scorer. They're going down to Serie B, right? No, he's done the same with the replacements. And now it's a whole new bunch of players that we'd never heard of, like Lovato. And he has brought the best out of guys. I mean, look at Zaccagni, who's now linked to a big money move to big Serie A clubs like Napoli. Di Marco, the on-loan Inter fullback who looks like, you know, kind of like a second coming of Theo Hernandez at times. I mean, he is really turning players that are unknowns into players that go on and join the big teams. And the three players he sold didn't really work out yet at their new teams, but Hellas Verona, once again, they're giving problems to all the big teams. They're defending well. They're an organized side, and they're doing this all once again without a clinical goal scorer. It is crazy. Ivan Juric needs to be in every talk of manager of the season, and Hellas Verona might actually sneak into European place. I wouldn't be shocked at this point.
No, and this just goes to show you that basically this is how important a squad is, and this is how important a coach can be, unless it's Napoli. But anyway, my offer on this is I'm absolutely in love with Ivan Juric, but one guy who did actually test him quite a lot was Italiano Spezia. I think this is a team, like, I'm madly in love with them. And in fact, it was Spezia getting a red card that eventually allowed Verona to take over that match. But this is a team that really has very little, their overall market value of all the players is 50 million, which is still better than Benevento and Crotone, but it is a very small squad. And yet they've terrified so many of the big teams. Obviously we know that they've won over Roma and they managed to draw with Atalanta. But more than just results, because that's not what I want to look at, it's their performances, the organization of it. The fact is that this is a team that really lacks a lot of technique. And yet when they play together, their understanding of space, the way that they move, the passing outlets they offer one another, the sacrifices put into that squad, the organization at the back, it is truly wonderful to watch. I mean, if you look at the side and you just imagine Italiano in charge of a team that has more talents, and the way that they've all grasped his ideals, the instructions that he's laid out, I think is wonderful to watch from Spezia. And I feel like, I felt a little bit sorry for Fonseca, because it was like, this is the game that was going to potentially see him being sacked if he didn't win it. And the fact is he was like celebrating like mad after having won 4-3 over Spezia again over this weekend, Pellegrini coming to rescue him, because this is the side that it's scary to watch. And they're only in 15th place. But with what they have and what they've managed to do with it, I think it's amazing.
I think those are both great answers. I like them both. But sometimes the correct answer, the right answer, is the most obvious answer. Atalanta have a wage bill that is roughly 1/5 to 1/6 of what Juventus spend on wages. It's about twice what Spezia sent. So put those things into perspective. It's a lot closer to being the smallest than the biggest. With the beginning of the season, they were in the Monte Stipendi, the salary mountain, as they like to talk about in Italy. It was 11th or 12th in Serie A. And guess who the most high-paid player in that squad was? Papu Gomez, who's now gone. They, with those resources, play at a Champions League level. They compete in the Champions League with clubs who are spending even more again. And they go and get results like Walloping Milan 3-0. It's an obvious answer, and I feel
always
bad
so
because
sensible.
You two have been more creative actually thinking
hipsters
about things, but they are the team that is doing the most with their resources.
Atalanta's mainstream now. I mean, the new Atalanta, no one mentions Sassuolo. Let's just put it out there.
Well,
no one mentions Sassuolo.
With your homework, you had the option. Maybe I was going to, but I'm just the host here. Listen, a couple of fixtures to look out for this weekend. Atalanta do take on Lazio. That's definitely worth a watch. And Roma taking on LS Verona. So don't miss those. We'll probably be talking about them on next week's show. But that's it for this week. Ciao for now.